Well, let's look at Exodus chapter 20 some more, and the fourth commandment. We've had no other gods. Don't misuse, I know idols, don't misuse his name. And today to honor the Sabbath day. Now, you know, we are on another side of the cross from when the Ten Commandments were written, and so there are some things about this commandment that have changed, I guess we could say. Well, for one thing, the New Testament says we're not held to days and new moons and calendar events. But let's see what the Lord had in mind when, as best we can understand, when he gave this commandment to Israel. Now, that's something to keep in mind, that this is a commandment. These commandments are given to Israel. And even though it was given to Israel, there are still some parts of it, some of the characteristic of it that we need to keep in mind. Because like the little quote that's in your bulletin says, God is not bowed to our nervous haste. The man who would know God has to give time to God. So let's just look at the words of the commandment. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. Remember. Now, the Hebrew word means, it can mean to mark it down, to make it important. We are so blessed in our day that we tend to forget to give time to God. Whether it's a whole day, or just a little time in prayer, or a little time in reading His Word, or a little time in fellowshipping with other believers, we're so blessed that, and especially, this is kind of a special group. Oh, you are a very special group. But we're kind of distinct in the fact that most are retired. And so you kind of may be like we sometimes are, and lose track of what day it is. You know, you're so blessed that Monday looks a lot like Tuesday, and Tuesday looks like Wednesday, and then all of a sudden you notice, is this Saturday or is this Friday? Is tomorrow Sunday? That's because we're blessed. You know, we have a flexible schedule, and we have time to do things, and so we every day kind of gets to sound, looking the same and sounding the same. And so in your notes, I said we need to be dishabituated, just because I like to use a weird word every once in a while. That's a psychological term. And what it has to do with is like, have you ever lived near a freeway or a railroad track? One of the places we lived growing up was near a railroad track. I mean, right next to a railroad track, and it was in town. So when the trains came, they had to blow the horn for the crossing that was coming. And when we moved there, everybody said, we can't live like this. You know, that thing's going to keep us awake. That thing's going to disturb us all the time. And within just a little while, we never knew if the trains came or not, because we got habituated to it. We just adapted. And we're so blessed that all our days kind of blend together and look alike. So we need to be dishabituated so that we recognize that there is a Sabbath day. There is a day of rest. Or should be. All right? Now, for the Israelites to whom this was written, consider what they were coming out of. They were coming out of slavery in Egypt. Not they had been in slavery in Israel, it's possible that they would have taken the seventh day off, you know, or things would have been different. But they're coming out of Egypt that does not recognize God's creation, the creation story. And so they probably worked every day. And so when they got this commandment, I bet they said, "Woo-hoo! That's a good commandment. Don't work. God has given us a day to not work." And so they're thinking, that's really good. Now, of course, as time goes on, they, the Israelites, being like us, got creative in and really found ways to mess up a good thing. We'll talk about that as we go along. But they had to understand it as a real blessing from God for God to say, y'all shut down one day a week. Now, let me show you a little example of how Israelites like us can mess up. Go back a couple of chapters to Exodus chapter 16, and there you have the account of the manna being given to Israel. Manna from heaven, and that's not all, but manna was especially affected by the Sabbath day. And manna and quail or meat and birds in the evening were a gift of God, even though it was a response to Israel's whining and grumbling and moaning. But the rule on manna was that you pick up manna 6 days a week, and on the sixth day you pick up a double portion. On the other days, you only picked up enough for you to eat that day. But on the sixth day, you would pick up a double portion, because on the Sabbath day, there was going to be no manna, because God didn't want you getting out and working on the Sabbath day. Now, everybody said, okay, that'll work. Look at verse 22. On the sixth day, they gathered twice as much bread, 2 omer each. And when all the leaders of the congregation came and told Moses, he said to them, this is what the Lord has commanded. Tomorrow is a day of solemn rest, a holy Sabbath to the Lord. Bake what you will bake and boil what you will boil, and all that is left lay aside to be kept till the morning. And so they laid it aside till morning as Moses commanded them, and it didn't stink. That was the problem. If you picked up more than you were going to use, you couldn't store it. It got rancid before the next day. And so, down to verse 27, on the seventh day, some of the people went out to gather, but they found none. And the Lord said to Moses, how long will you refuse to keep my commandments and my laws? And so you have the Sabbath day, I think, when in chapter 20, as it's given as a commandment, we can see it viewed from the context of slavery, and it's welcomed. But back in chapter 16, in the context of being blessed, the Sabbath day turned out to just be a hassle for some people, because they had to remember that it's a special day. Matter of fact, they had to remember it 2 days. They had to remember it on the sixth day so that they would prepare for the seventh day. And then on the seventh day, they had to remember that it was the Lord that had blessed them. All right? Now, that kind of gives us a hint about how to deal with a day of rest. If you're going to really take a day of rest, if you're really going to have a Sabbath day rest or a Lord's day rest, it's going to work best if you prepare for it. Y'all remember having children in your house? Do you remember what a pain in the whatever it was on Sunday morning? You know, by the time you get the kids dressed and makeup on and everybody in the car, and you know, I'd pick clothes out and find the Sunday school books and the Bibles and the offering for everybody, and by the time you get to church you just want to slap somebody. And then the preacher has to try to communicate with you. But you know what, well, for us always made that work better is if on Saturday you prepared for Sunday. You had some clothes ready. The kids knew that the next day was Sunday. Judy would put her makeup on the night before. Judy never needs makeup. But a little preparation makes the Lord's Day function a lot better. And so he says to remember, to mark it, to distinguish it from other days, and then he says to keep it holy. That is one word, to keep it holy. So what does that mean? Another way of translating that is to sanctify it or to keep it separate. The most literal translation of that word that is translated in our English as keep it holy is one word, and it is kneel. Isn't that interesting? Kneel with a K. Kneel. To make it different. And it has been holy. The Lord reminds them and commands them to do that here in Exodus. But way back at creation in Genesis chapter 2, it says, "Thus the heaven and earth were finished, and all the host of them. And on the seventh day, God finished his work that he had done, and he rested on the seventh day from all his work that he had done." And so God blessed the seventh day, and he made it holy. He made it a day to kneel. Because on it, God rested from all his work that he had done in creation. So you keep it holy. It has really been holy ever since creation. Do it purposefully. In Nehemiah, in the book of Nehemiah, when they had a chance to go back from captivity and rebuild Jerusalem, one of the things that they had to do was, again, accustom people to keeping a Sabbath. And so in chapter 13 of Nehemiah, it says, "In those days, I, Nehemiah, saw in Judah people treading wine presses on the Sabbath and bringing in heaps of grain and loading them on donkeys and also wine and grapes and figs and all kinds of loaves which they brought into Jerusalem on the Sabbath day. And I warned them on the day when they sold food. And the folks from Tyre who lived in that city brought in fish and all kinds of goods and sold them on the Sabbath to the people of Judah in Jerusalem itself. And so I confronted the nobles of Judah and said, 'What is this evil thing that you're doing, profaning the Sabbath day?'" And so he calls them to account. And matter of fact, he goes to the point where they close the gates by the evening at sundown. And the merchants from other cities would come and they would wait outside the gates. And Nehemiah said, "There's no need for y'all to wait." No, that's not what he said. He said, "Y'all get on away from here. There's not going to be any carrying on business today. This is the Lord's Sabbath. This is the day that we keep holy, that we think of Him." So if you're going to have a Sabbath, you realize that it's not something new. It didn't just start with the Ten Commandments. It started with creation. It is something that you'll have to maintain purposefully. And we can also look in Exodus and see that God took it seriously. And there's another point in Exodus where God says, if anyone breaks the Sabbath, they will be executed. There was a death penalty for breaking the Sabbath. That's pretty serious. And it is to be kept publicly. Let's look at the last, I think, our chapter 31 of Exodus. Kind of reestablishing things here, and he says, the Lord said to Moses, "You are to speak to the people of Israel and say, 'Above all, you shall keep my Sabbath. For this is a sign between me and you and throughout your generation, that you may know that I, the Lord, sanctify you. You shall keep the Sabbath because it is holy for you. Everyone who profanes it shall be put to death. Whoever does any work on it, that soul shall be cut off from among the people. 6 days shall work be done, but the seventh day is a Sabbath of solemn rest, holy to the Lord. Whoever does any work on the Sabbath day shall be put to death. And therefore the people of Israel shall keep the Sabbath, observing the Sabbath throughout the generations as a covenant forever. It is a sign," what does your version say there? Chapter 31, verse 17. "It is a sign," mine says, "forever, between me and the people of Israel, that in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, and on the seventh day he rested and was refreshed." So it's to be done publicly. He says this is a sign, not just to you, but to people around him. And so people in nations around Israel, when Israel was obedient, knew that on the seventh, these crazy people were going to just shut down. And they knew that it had something to do with their God. So it's a statement. So he says, remember it to keep it holy. And then look at like verse 9 back in Exodus 20. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work. Now, you say, well, I don't have a job now. I'm retired. The Mexican word is jubilado. That's what you're doing. You're just jubilating. That's a good thing. That's a good way to be. But now, as we look at that verse, verse 9, in 6 days you shall labor. The word, the Hebrew word that's translated labor can also be translated serve. And in 6 days you shall do all your work, or do ministry is another way of translating do all your work. Isn't that interesting? So that can apply to you whether you have a paying job or not. But 6 days he gives us, and in 6 days we should be doing service, and in 6 days we should be doing ministry. So really, that you can see that as a couple of warnings, a warning to not make the seventh day different. I mean, not make the seventh day the same as all the others, but also to do something in the 6 days. You don't have to be making money. You don't have to be working hard. But there ought to be some work in your life, some service and some ministry in your life. The word Sabbath means rest. Or intermission is another way of translating it. And so the seventh day was God's intermission. I like that better than the word rest, because was God tired after speaking creation into existence? No, God never gets tired. That's what Isaiah 40:28 says. Your God doesn't get tired. So what was it all about? What did he do, and what does he want us to do specifically a day of the week? Or what did he want Israel to do on a day of the week? It's kind of like some of you are musical and read music, and you're going through and you're seeing all these funny little notes and things, and all of a sudden you come to something that looks like a little squashed top hat. What do you call that? Call that a rest. Does that mean because you have sung so hard up to this point that you just need to sit down and take a break? No. And there are different measures of rest. The whole idea of a rest is so that it's to give emphasis to the stuff that's before and after it. So, you know, if you're singing along and all of a sudden you stop and kind of get ready, and then pa-ya, you know, there you go. That's what a rest is all about. That's what God's rest was about. He wasn't tired, but he was calling emphasis to what he had done. God doesn't need to rest up. But he wants us not so much to be blown out so that we have to lay around on the seventh day, but so that we can call emphasis to the work that we do and call emphasis to him on that day of rest. Now, another thing about this Sabbath that's very interesting and very unique to this law and to the people in those days, look in verse 10. But the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God, and on it you shall not do any work. You shall not do any work. Your son shall not do any work. Your daughter shall not do any work. Your male servant shall not do any work. Your female servant, even your female servant shall not do any work. I know I'm not saying that from my perspective, but I'm saying that from their perspective. Now look at this God. He has given us a commandment to rest. He has even given a commandment for women to rest. Now that was a novel concept. And not only women, but also your livestock. Not only your livestock, but your guests, sojourners, people just passing through. You come into my town, you come into my house on the Lord's Day or on the Sabbath day, you're gonna rest. You're going to rest, it kills you. Matter of fact, if you don't rest, we will kill you. That's pretty good. But it applied to everyone. This idea of this rest, this emphasis, was applied to everyone. This is equality, which was unknown in that day. And so, the Lord says, consecrate this day. But what the Hebrews did, being people, is they, instead of consecrating, they just went crazy. In Hebrew, this commandment has 39 Hebrew words. And so the teachers came up with 39 ways to avoid breaking the Sabbath, or 39 things that you might do that might break the Sabbath. So you avoid these things, these 39 things. But then, because people are so creative, they broke each of those 39 ways down into 39 divisions. And so they came up with 1,521 specific ways that you could break the Sabbath. 1,521 things that you needed to avoid in order to keep the Sabbath. What was the purpose of the Sabbath? Rest and emphasis on God, a gift from God. And what did they turn it into? Craziness is the short one. 1,521 things to focus on other than God. And so the blessing became a burden. And God's gift, Jesus said in Matthew 15, you've made God's gift of no effect. So that's what they did. They ruined it. They turned it into trouble. Now, let me share a few interesting things about the Sabbath. Some of the rules that they had. A man could not carry something in his right hand or in his left hand across his chest or on his shoulder. But he could carry something with the back of his hand or with his foot or with his elbow or in his ear or in his hair or in the hem of his shirt. Or in his shoe or his sandal. So if you're going to tote something on the Sabbath, you could only do it on the back of your hand or on your foot. That's probably where soccer came from. You can stick it in your ear. Maybe that's where that came from. On the Sabbath, Israelites were forbidden to tie a knot, except a woman could tie a knot in her girdle, which in those days was a belt. Because what's coming is going to be a weird picture if you don't see it that way. So a bucket of water, if a bucket of water had to be raised from a well, an Israelite could not tie a rope on the bucket, but a woman could tie her girdle to the bucket and pull it up from the well. Now, using the picture of a belt just works better for me than this spandex thing. Bam! Whatever. Even today, in a Jewish home, Orthodox Jew, one cannot turn on a light, a stove, or a switch on the Sabbath because that would be kindling a fire. It's forbidden to drive a distance or make a telephone call, all carefully regulated by tradition that's spelled out in their minutia. Read about a fellow, Mark Driscoll, was in Israel, and he was in a hotel, a multi-level hotel, and Saturday evening came out of his room, it was Friday evening, and all this, there's this long line behind an elevator, and on the elevator it says Sabbath Elevator. And now there's another elevator on down a little ways, and it doesn't have anything on it. And so he asked people around him, is there anything wrong with that elevator? And they said, no. But this is the Sabbath Elevator. And it is regulated so that on the Sabbath, it stops at every floor. So nobody has to break the Sabbath by pushing a button. So Driscoll went over, he said, well, can I use it? Well, you're not a Jew. Yeah, so he went and got in that other elevator, and all the people crowded in around him and said, would you push number one? Would you push? Isn't that bizarre? People are so creative. Let's look at the concept of rest in the Bible. There are three types of rest that the Bible speaks of. One of them is a creation rest. And that's what we have in Genesis chapter 2. After God created everything, He took that rest, that day of emphasis, that day to take note of what had gone on. But now, God's creation rest was disturbed. God's creation rest in Genesis chapter 2 was disturbed by Genesis chapter 3, wherein sin entered into the picture. And so, from that point until Jesus came, God went back to work all the time. Do you know how I know that? Look at John chapter 5, New Testament. In John chapter 5, you have Jesus healing on the Sabbath, the man by the pool of Bethesda. And the leaders of Judaism were all upset because Jesus healed this man who had been crippled for all these years. And they were upset because, verse 9, now that day was the Sabbath. Look at verse 17 if you're in John chapter 5. But Jesus answered them, "My Father is working until now, and I am working." That was on the Sabbath. That was on the seventh day. Jesus said, because of sin, which brought about sickness and death, the Father has been working every day of the week. And Jesus said, I'm working on every day of the week too. Sin disrupted that creation rest. And so the next rest that came along that we read about here in the commandments is covenant rest. And God said that when you keep the Sabbath day, it points to the fact that there's a covenant between you and me. That it tells the whole world that you have been set aside, that I have made promises to you. And so you as people, you need to take a rest. God is going to take care of everything on the Sabbath. His rest is over until Calvary. And that's the third rest. Calvary's rest. God the Father rested from His creation, and then Jesus, after He's crucified, He says, it is finished, and He rests from having done the new creation. 2 Corinthians 5:17, if anybody is in Him, He is a new creation. All things, old things have passed away. All things have become new. We become a new creation because of Jesus paying our sin penalty on the cross, dealing with that sin that disrupted God's creation rest. Hebrews 10 says that after that, Jesus sat down. He rested. What we read in, what Wanda read for us in Hebrews, again says, so then there remains a Sabbath rest for the people of God. For whoever has entered God's rest has also rested from His work as God did from His. When you enter into a relationship with God through Jesus Christ, you have rest. Every day is rest. Matter of fact, Jesus said in Matthew 11, 28, come unto me, all ye who are heavy laden and weary, and I will give you rest. And so with the cross, and this new concept of rest in Christ, and every day being a day of rest, we shift from the Sabbath to, because the Sabbath really means the seventh, you know, signifies the seventh day. It means rest. But we don't keep the Sabbath anymore. We keep the first day of the week instead of the seventh day of the week. Y'all know this is the first day of the week? Sunday. A lot of calendars are not that way anymore because they're written for the work week. But Sunday was the first day of the week. And so we shift from the Sabbath day to the Lord's day, our day of emphasis. And we shift from law to love. Jesus makes all the difference by His substitutionary death, burial, and resurrection. What kind of things happened on the first day of the week? Why do we celebrate the Lord's Day, the first day of the week? On the first day of the week, Jesus was raised. on the first day of the week, Jesus met with His disciples and He commissioned them and He gave them the Holy Spirit. On the first day of the week, in Acts chapter 2, the church was born. Throughout the New Testament, it says on the first day of the week they met regularly. I've got some verses in your notes you can look up, verify these things. And if you remember, we just finished Revelation. And when was the revelation given? John said, on the first day of the week, I was in the Spirit. And so we celebrate the first day of the week, the Lord's Day. On the last day, the Lord rested from the work of His hands that showed His power, His creation. On the first day of the week, we see the work of the Lord's heart and His grace and salvation. So the last day, the seventh day, reminds us of God's work with His hands and His creation. The first day reminds us of the work of God's heart and His grace, which is salvation. Now there are some people who say, well, the commandment is still there. And so even Christians should keep the Sabbath. Well, here's the problem with that. The Bible tells us, let's sing. Colossians chapter 2. It says in verse 16, therefore let no one pass judgment on you in questions of food or drink or with regard to a festival or a new moon or a Sabbath. These are a shadow of things to come, but the substance belongs to Christ. See, if you're intent on keeping the Sabbath on the seventh day, then you are chasing shadows. You ever seen a dog that would chase the shadow of something that was flying over? Dogs, I love them, but they're not as smart as we are, I hope. And so we don't chase the shadow because we have experienced the real thing, which is Christ. Another problem with those who are intent on keeping the Sabbath, they don't really want to keep the Sabbath like the Jews kept the Sabbath because they're going to turn on lights. They're going to crank that car. All those are making fire. They're going to push a button which causes something to work. They don't want that kind of Sabbath. And a lot of times it has to do with pride. And in Jesus' day, what the Pharisees were doing was showing how well they could do. It was a pride thing as much as an emphasis on God thing. So those who are intent on keeping a seventh-day Sabbath are just operating on the wrong side of Calvary. So do we have to be here on Sunday? Do you have to keep a Sabbath day rest? Well, that's not what Colossians said here. Colossians said, don't let anybody pass judgment on you because you don't keep a day. Galatians 4. Let's see, verse 9. But now you have come to know God, or rather be known by God. How can you turn back again to the weak and worthless regular everyday principles of the world, whose slave you once were? You observe days and months and seasons and years, and I'm afraid I have labored over you in vain. And the problem was that they saw that, not that they took a day of rest, not that they kept the Lord's Day, but they put their trust in that. They put their pride in that. Look how holy I am. Look how close to Jesus I am, because I have not missed a day of church in 50 years. I have been in Sunday school every Sunday, and I've got the little buttons to prove it. I made 100 on my envelope every time. That kind of observance. Now, those are not bad things, unless that's where you put your pride. And Paul said, I'm not going to take pride in anything but Jesus. So how do we keep the Lord's Day? The Lord's Day is a good thing. It is still a good thing to have a day that's holy, that's set aside, a day to rest. And the way that we do it would be a rest before we go to work, a preparation day instead of an emphasis on what we've already done, but a preparation for what's going. Here's some ways that you can help keep the Sabbath. Now, first of all, I have to say there's no rules because it's about a day of love and not legalism. And some people will come and say, well, can I go on a trip on Sunday, on the Lord's Day? Or can I mow the grass on the Lord's Day? Do you think it's okay, preacher, for me to go to the movie on the Lord's Day or to go out to eat on the Lord's Day? Preacher, what do you think? Well, here's the problem with that. I'm not the one to ask. It's not my day. And if He's your Lord, you can ask Him. If you ask Him with an honest and open heart, He will tell you, He will speak to your spirit about what is appropriate on the day that you have set aside to honor Him. So there's not any rules, hard rules. Every day is special. You say, well, that's what some people want to say. Well, every day is exactly that, special. Every day is a Sabbath day, so there's no need to set aside a special day. Well, you know what? Every prayer is special too. Every prayer is important, and the Bible tells us to pray continually. But Jesus said sometime you need to go into your closet and shut the door. That's a special, special day. Every offering, everything we have belongs to the Lord. But He says to set aside a tithe and offerings for it to be gathered on the first day of the week as God has prospered you. And so we recognize in that everything is the Lord's in a special, special way. And so having a special day, celebrating the Lord's Day, is special. It is appropriate. It's not required. But things to do. Well, if you're going to recognize the Lord's Day, make it a holy day. In Hebrews 10:25, it says, be sure not forsake the assembling of yourselves together as some have. So it's a day when we come together to encourage one another, to enjoy one another, to praise the Lord together, to pray together, to learn together, fellowship. It's holy. It's a day that we can pass on to those who come behind us. There's always a psalm for just about anything. Psalm 145 speaks of this. 1 generation shall commend your work, Lord, to another, and shall declare your mighty acts. Sunday's a good day to let the next generation know how good the Lord is. Let folks around us know how good the Lord is. So if it's going to be a holy day, that's only going to work if you make it a priority, if you prepare for it. Pick up 2 days of manna on the day before. It ought to be a restful day, a day that we rest not just from work, but for work. And some folks say, well, I've just got so much to do, I can't shut down and take a break. Well, you know, yes you can. Because really, that's the way we're built. God has created us to function that way, to need a day of rest. And it can be a day when your rest is preparation for what's coming in a way that a lumberjack, if he shuts down chopping trees for a while to sharpen his axe, he is not sloughing off. And so to come together or to just take a day off and a day of rest and make it the Lord's Day, it is not sloughing off. It's preparation for the service and ministry that's coming. So make it a holy day and make it a restful day. And make it a day that's enjoyable. I think when the world looks at us and hears things like, well, I got to go to church tomorrow, they may not see that as celebrating the resurrection. Remember, we call it the Lord's Day because it's a day that the Lord was resurrected, the first day of the week. And so it ought to be a day of gladness. It ought to be a resurrection day celebration every week. It ought to be every day, but again, it ought to be a special, special celebration on the Lord's Day. Holy, restful, joyful, a day when we just focus on the fact that we can rest from trying to save ourselves because Jesus has done it all. But that rest is only ours if Jesus is ours. If we have done what He told us to do when He said, "Come unto Me, all ye who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest." Have you done that? Have you come to Him? We invite you to do that. We're going to sing a hymn of invitation, what we call it in the Baptist Church. It's just a regular old hymn. But it comes at this point when we invite you to respond to Jesus Christ. If you don't know Him as Lord,